Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. This is going to be an empowering hour. We're going to learn the latest on health and healing and how salt can raise your blood pressure and cause problems in your brain. Also, why walnuts can improve your memory. We'll also look at the fact that sitting for long periods of time increases your risk of disease and early death. And a lot of people do that. How a blueberry, avocado, kokai, bean smoothie keeps the doctor away. We'll go through each one of those and why it's important. Also, that routine consumption of aspirin that we're told by our cardiologist to take if we have a heart problem, well, it's a big lie. David Gutris, Natural News, will give us the latest on that. And a lot more. Also, a little follow-up to yesterday's program where my guest was talking about, Norma Erickson, was talking about the human papillomavirus vaccine. She believes, is completely worthless. A group of scientists just completed a major study published in the peer-reviewed journal Molecular Cytogenics, and saying that the human papillomavirus that we have always assumed and believed was the single cause of cervical cancer, it's not the case. So I'll give you more on that. Also, 8 ways science reveals that hugging creates a physiological response equivalent to drugs. And then 2 guests today, Allison Murphy on New York State Assembly bill to label supplements as to whether they were reviewed by the FDA. Well, that's stupid because the FDA doesn't review any drugs or supplements. So in the way that they're asking. And then my first guest will be Gary Rushkin from San Francisco on what big food is hiding with its slick PR campaigns on GMOs. So the latest on GMOs. And Gary Rushkin is the co-founder and executive director of U.S. Right to Know, a nonprofit that looks at investigating and exposing the failures of the corporate food system and the dark propaganda hidden from the public. So we'll deal with that as well. And we have a lot of other things. I'm going to do some brief mentions of welfare for corporate America, starting with Walmart, $2.6 billion. Also, for those of you who believe that corporate America and the rich in America should be paying a higher percentage of taxes, that doesn't concern me. I'll look at the larger picture and tell you what does concern me and what the left is not acknowledging, at least the corporate left. And also, you know all these democracy groups that have come about in the last 20 years? Well, according to an outstanding article that I read early this morning, Robert Perry, the CIA has got its hidden hand in all these democracy groups. So we'll deal with that. We have a lot to share. Let us begin. We know that not all salt is the same. I suggest that if you're going to have salt, use the Himalayan pink sea salt. At least you're getting something that has been formed over millions, even hundreds of millions of years, comes from the foothills of the Himalayas, and it's got minerals in it. It is not a pure white salt like most of the other salts are, but even that should be used with a very light hand. I always recommend that if you want something that tastes like salt, just combine equal parts of lemon juice and apple cider vinegar, and then just spray it on your salads or any other item you're using. It's almost indistinguishable from salt with none of the harmful effects. Well, McGill University in Montreal says that salt can raise blood pressure by disabling safety mechanisms in your brain. Now, although the link between salt consumption and high blood pressure is well known, the underlying mechanism is not so clear. Now, this new study finds that high salt intake over a period of time interferes with brain circuits that normally suppress high blood pressure. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Neuron. So my suggestion is, they say, well, you can take up to 5,000 grams a day. That's 5,000 milligrams sodium a day. I say, no, you should only be taking 1,000 milligrams, and that's important. And I would say, make sure you're getting potassium, because when you have a lowered potassium level, you increase your risk of increasing blood pressure and hence stroke. One of the ways that I was first able to give some advice, health advice, to a person who had been my editor at a major publishing company who developed cancer and it was end stage. And they were at Trafalgar Hospital. And I was just thinking, what was it about the Gerson diet that made the difference? And I had studied the Gerson diet. I'd visited the Gerson Center that his daughter had been running, Charlotte Gerson Strauss. And I felt that they didn't have it right. They had the idea that juices were important, but they had lots of carrot juice, and lots of carrot juice is simply not good for you. Raise your blood sugar, puts extra pressure on having to lower the blood sugar. So it wasn't the carrot juice. It had to be something else. And I did an analysis, and I figure it had to be the potassium. I began to look at all the scientific literature on what happens when we decrease our sodium intake and increase our potassium level if you have cancer. And lo and behold, there it was. So that's why I advocate avocados and bananas and other foods that are sourced for potassium or potassium supplements. Because the better the balance of potassium and the less sodium, the better you are at preventing cancer, if you have cancer, preventing it from metastasizing. So when I look at how much sodium we're taking in way too much. Way too much. And you're getting sodium in things like milk that you're not even aware of. And so look at the ingredients on the label and give you an idea. Let's just say bread contains 250 milligrams of sodium per 100 grams, and meat contains 1,500 milligrams of sodium per 3 ounces. And let's say that you just have some snacks, like some of the cheese puffs and commercial popcorn, 1,500 milligrams per 3 ounces. So, and you get some of those stock cubes that you use as a base for soups, 20,000 milligrams per 100 grams. Well, that can really play havoc with your biochemistry. So you're getting more sodium than what you need in one single item, in one single meal in a day. Little wonder that we have an epidemic of stroke and high blood pressure in the United States. Walnuts are good for your memory. That's according to the University of California at Los Angeles. They found a, quote, significant positive association between walnut consumption and cognitive function across all demographics. Quote, eating walnuts may improve performance on cognitive function tests, including those for memory, concentration, and information processing speed. And that was at the David Geffen School of Medicine, University of California. Dr. Lenore Arab stated that the cognitive function was consistently greater in adult participants that consume walnuts, regardless of their age, gender, ethnicity. So here's the takeaway message. We know that walnuts are great for your heart. We know they help prevent stroke and heart attack. We know that they are a great source of oils for your cells. Now we know they're good for your brain. So if you know anyone suffering from memory loss, cognitive decline, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, or multiple sclerosis, get them a handful of walnuts each day. Now, if they don't have the capacity to eat the walnuts, then give them walnut raw butter. That's merely where they puree the raw walnuts. That's easy to digest. A good study from Stanford University tells us about telomere extension turns back aging clock in cultured human cells. So this new procedure can quickly and efficiently increase the length of human telomeres, the protective caps on the ends of chromosomes that are linked to aging and disease. That's according to Stanford University School of Medicine. The treated cells behave as if they are much younger than untreated cells, multiplying with abandon in the laboratory dish rather than stagnating or dying. The procedure, which involves the use of a modified type of RNA, will improve the ability of researchers to generate large numbers of cells for studies. So what do we need to do? How does this help us? Well, I spent 31 years studying anti-aging at the Institute of Applied Biology, and one of the things that was studied was telomeres and what causes them to speed up, which is bad, or slow down in their division, which is good. And I found that eating a living food diet, living food is meaning that 100% of what you're taking in has the capacity for restorative biochemical homeostasis. Lay language, an apple, walnut, string beans, broccoli, parsnips, turnips, kohlrabi, all the berries, all the living herbs, basil, oregano, thyme, dill, fennel, anise, turmeric. The juices especially. The more juices you consume, the more you help lengthen the time in between the change of the telomeres. And the nutrients, the number one nutrient for your telomere lengthening is L-carnosine, C-A-R-N, carnosine, carnosine, 1,000, 2,000 milligrams once or twice a day. Resveratrol, hence grapes. Grapes eating them, grape juice, grape concentrate, or most important, best of all, superstar, grape powder. Because when you're getting 100 or more milligrams of resveratrol, that is doing a lot to help the telomeres. So literally, we can turn back the internal clock. Quote from the study from Professor Helen Blau, professor of microbiology and immunology at Stanford and director of the university's Baxter Laboratory for Stem Cell Biology. Quote, now we have a way to lengthen human telomeres by as much as 1,000 nucleotides, turning back the internal clock in these cells by the equivalent of many years of human life. This greatly increases the number of cells available for studies such as drug testing or disease modeling. This was published in a major scientific journal, and I will post it on our website so you can read it. All of the studies I cite each day, I post, but the good news is I'm posting about 100 additional studies, videos, quotes, inspirational, feel good, touch your heart, stimulate your brain, provoke emotion at all levels of social consciousness. Also, it seems to be working. As of this morning, I saw the number was up to 20 million today. So people are getting it and sharing it. We have more original posts each day than the Huffington Post, the BBC, Al Jazeera, than any place I know in the world. And especially we're the only one that does only progressive issues. Just go to GaryNall.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or my Facebook. Sitting for long periods of time, as a lot of people do, increases the risk of disease and early death. This is from the Annals of Internal Medicine. This was done at the Toronto Rehab University Health Network and the Institute of Clinical Evaluative Studies. Quote, the amount of time a person sits during the day is associated with a higher risk of heart disease, diabetes, cancer, and death, regardless of regular exercise. Wow. So a lot of people thought, okay, I can sit a long period of time because I exercise. Not so. This is really revelatory. Quote, more than one half of an average person's day is spent being sedentary, sitting, watching television, or working at a computer. Our study finds that despite the health-enhancing benefits of physical activity, meaning exercise, this alone may not be enough to reduce the risk of disease. So, do not sit a whole lot and think of the problem that is for those who drive a lot. That's sitting. We have a lot of people like right now listening across the United States and Canada who are driving trucks and cars. We have a lot of cab drivers in New York who listen to this program every day. A lot of Haitians listen to this program every day. And I'm asking them to use magnetic pads so that you're at least getting some magnet polarization within the cells. That will help. Also, to get yourself a little foot roller that when you take a little break, and you should, even for 2 minutes, just roll the foot roller with your foot and extend your legs back and forth so you're exercising those muscles, the hamstring, the calf, the quad, and then get yourself a little beaded, a little circular, comfortable beaded mat that you can sit on, and so you also can extend that. When I'm flying, I use one of those, especially on long flights. And so I'm sitting in the chair, because possibly you can't get out of the seat. You extend the legs, and then you move yourself back and forth in the seat, and that is stimulating circulation. That's also very good so you don't end up with thrombosis and have a blood clot in your leg, which is very, very probable in some people who have poor circulation. You form a clot because your legs are bent. Just visualize a water hose where the thigh goes out and then the kneecap and then you go straight down. That's like putting a crimp in a water hose. So that's not good. So you want to keep your legs extended. And then you want to have that motion. And at least every 20 minutes on a flight, get up and walk up and down the aisle and do some three-quarter knee bends. Just bend down and up, about for a minute or two. That reintroduces circulation, movement of blood. It's good for you, and it can also help prevent a clot. I also recommend that you take 1,000 milligrams of buffered vitamin C for every hour that you're on a plane or up till loose stools or beginning of diarrhea, and then you back it back. Then vitamin E, 400 units every 3 hours. Quercetin, half of what you would take with vitamin C, you take with quercetin. And coenzyme Q10, 100 milligrams for every 3 hours that you're on a flight. These will help prevent heart attack, clots, and stroke. Now, something that will really help the day, according to Prevent Disease, is a special smoothie. So I've shared my smoothie. Here's their smoothie. And it's a good one. Blueberries. I just mentioned blueberries yesterday. A cup of blueberries lowers your blood pressure. Well, we know that according to the Journal of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics and Florida State University researchers, they're saying that a mere 8 weeks, 48 postmenopausal women with pre- and stage 1 hypertension were randomly given either 22 grams of blueberry powder, which is just over an ounce, not much, and or placebo powder. And they found that, quote, that patients' blood pressure was taken and their arterial stiffness was measured, and blood biomarkers were also ascertained. By the end of the study, patients who consume blueberry powder on average experience a substantial decrease in systolic blood pressure and reduction in diastolic blood pressure. And that's terrific. Now, they also found that an avocado a day is great to keep a heart attack away. Now, it can lower the blood cholesterol. That's according to the Journal of the American Heart Association. And it's really good at bringing down some of the blood indicators, like the low-density lipoproteins, which are the bad cholesterol. So, and it gives you good fats, which your body needs. And they did a study from people 21 to 70, and all of them, every single one, improved their low-density lipoprotein and total cholesterol, which is good. That helps save them. And then they found that the coca beans, these beans are what you make chocolate from, and according to the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, they did a study here, and it was terrific. They did a relatively small amount, and they found that it also lowered cholesterol, and hence that helps prevent heart attacks and stroke. So, no reason you can't put all those in a smoothie. And one more thing before we take our break. From our public health segment, we've all been told that if we want to have less likelihood of having a heart attack, that we should have an aspirin a day. Okay, most people don't question that. Now you should. According to David Gutierrez, taking, quote, an aspirin a day appears to increase a person's risk of dangerous gastric bleeding as much as it decreases their risk of heart attack or stroke. Quote, we don't have good evidence that for healthy people, the benefits of long-term aspirin exceed the risks by an appropriate margin. And that's according to Dr. Colin Begit of the Clinical Trial Service Unit at Oxford University. Now, why is this the case? Because health experts have been recommending for more than a decade that people considered at increased risk of cardiovascular disease, mainly high blood pressure, elevated cholesterol, who are overweight, or take one aspirin per day, as the medicine has been clinically shown to reduce the risk of serious vascular events in those people. This strategy, treating people with no symptoms of heart disease, is known as primary prevention. Now, a serious vascular event is a heart attack or a stroke or cardiovascular death. And many health agencies have shied away from issuing official recommendations. However, such as the United Kingdom National Health and Institute and Health and Clinical Excellence Program, quote, there is no definitive guidance, said Dr. Stephen Field, chair of the Royal College of General Practitioners, quote, and it makes it bewildering because you have a series of papers which then hint it would be beneficial to take aspirin, end quote. Well, according to Field, many patients are attracted to aspirin as a way to stave off heart attacks because the over-the-counter pills are too expensive. But the findings of the newest study published in The Lancet suggest that the risk of aspirin match the benefits in cases of primary prevention. Only in patients who have already had a heart attack or a stroke does the benefit appear to outweigh the risks. Quote, the important study does suggest people shouldn't take aspirin unless indicated by disease. So here's the takeaway message after looking at 22 studies involving over 100,000 people. If you do not have any symptoms of heart disease, and if you've not had a heart attack or stroke, you're not going to benefit. In fact, you could die because you're going to end up with bleeding. And over 25,000 people die each year from aspirin and other non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. But if you've had a heart attack or if you've had a stroke, then you may benefit from it. But I even question that. And in fact, one of New York's leading cardiologist, I had a discussion with this person. The person had called me because he wanted some advice on alternative approaches to heart disease, and I was happy to share it with him. And I brought along a series of articles, peer review articles, and I said, what nutrients are destroyed when you take aspirin? He said, I don't know. I said, well, folic acid, B6, B12, and vitamin C. Why are those nutrients important? I don't know. Because they lower the risk of homocysteine. What happens when you have, let's say, a 15, 16, 17, 18 point homocysteine level? Well, you increase your risk of a heart attack or stroke by 100, 200, 300%. So, by thinning the blood, and that's really all you're doing, you're thinning the blood. By using aspirin, you're also destroying the body's primary way of preventing elevated homocysteine, which kills a lot of people each year. It's a silent killer. And you kill people with the aspirin, stomach bleeding, and intestinal bleeding. And yet this is considered just acceptable, and it shouldn't be. Now, if you want to thin the blood, why don't you and prevent a heart attack or stroke, why don't you take coenzyme Q10 three times a day? Magnesium. Magnesium is one of the best ways in the world of preventing a heart attack or stroke at 400 milligrams three times a day. Why don't you take cayenne at a heat unit of about 40 to 60,000 units? Also thins the blood. What about black garlic? That will thin the blood. Also, vitamin C thins the blood, and if you took that throughout the day with quercetin, you're thinning the blood and preventing a heart attack, and they're both positive for your heart. And they also help with the epithelial tissue being repaired and healed so that you're less likely to have blockages. Why don't you also take L-carnitine, which gives energy to the heart directly and helps prevent the heart from having insufficient energy, and also give it potassium. 500 milligrams of potassium a day helps prevent heart attacks. So we can thin the blood easily. Green juices thin the blood. Green vegetables thin the blood. So if you have a glass of green juice twice a day, you've done far, far more than you could ever do with an aspirin. And he kind of shook his head and said, well, makes sense. I said, don't take my word for it. Here are 100 studies in peer-reviewed literature proving what I just said. I said, your industry are... they're so far behind. And he just said, I know. He didn't argue the point. And mind you, this is one of the considered the best and brightest, the cardiologist. It's just they get into this model and behavior, and it's hard for them to change. And yet, all the while, aspirin is increasing death. And in people now, for the first time on this radio program, I've shared a major study showing it doesn't help people unless they've already had a heart attack or stroke or have major symptoms. But then even if it did help, and I'm not disputing that it thins the blood, of course, I'm saying as you prevent a stroke by thinning the blood, you increase a heart attack risk because of homocysteine. So you have a chemical that helps with prevent one death and increases another death. To me, that is asinine. What is wrong with medicine? Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone? I'm Gary Nall. We're going to go to our first guest in a moment, but before we do, just wanted to give you a little more insight on what was discussed yesterday, which I think is extremely important, and that is that we have put all this emphasis in the last 5 years upon making every young girl in America, and boy now, take the human papilloma virus vaccine, Gardasil, or Cervarix. The trouble is we've had tens of thousands of adverse reactions, including hundreds of deaths. And Dr. Diane Harper, one of the original people involved in all this, now offers a far more cautious approach and is very concerned of how her original research has been extrapolated out of its original context. And I had her on this program to discuss this. In fact, she was in my latest documentary, The Silent Epidemic, on this. Now there is a really good study by a group of outstanding scientists published in Molecular Cytogenics. And here they say that, quote, according to this paper, neither genetic predisposition nor HPV, which is human papillomavirus, infections are necessary for the development of cervical cancer. All cervical cancer cells investigated during the course of this study contain new abnormal karyotypes. The clonality, genetic makeup, of these new abnormal karyotypes indicates that cervical cancer originated with these karyotypes, not from a virus. In order to grasp the potential significance of these statements, one must have a basic understanding of karyotypes. Most living things have chromosomes, or units of genetic information in their cells. The number and appearance of chromosome varies from one species to another. A karyotype is the number, size, and shape of chromosomes in any given organism. All cancers have individual clonal, cellular, descended. Well, I won't go into all the study because it gets very complicated when it starts talking about the DNA. But let's just go back. Let's go back to this one statement. Quote, indicates the cervical cancers originated with these karyotypes do not come from a virus. So, for everyone who is believing that you should get your kid vaccinated because otherwise at some point in the future they will end up with cervical cancer, that now has been substantially debunked and challenged. Everything they've done it based upon a flawed human papilloma virus causes cancer hypothesis. And instead of looking at the karyotypic, the way that it works inside the body. So, let's stop sacrificing our children just so that the greedy people at the pharmaceutical company and the people that they have influence over at the FDA and CDC, National Institutes of Health, can use your children as a profit stream. So let's now go over and say hello to Gary Ruskin. R-U-S-K-I-N. Gary is the co-founder and executive director of U.S. Right to Know, which is a nonprofit that works on investigating and exposing the failures of the corporate food system and the dark propaganda hidden from the public. In 2012, he was campaign manager for California Right to Know, Proposition 37, and earlier directed the Congressional Accountability Project for 14 years, which opposed corruption in the U.S. Congress. For 9 years, Gary was executive director and co-founder of Commercial Alert and also served as the director of the Center for Corporate Policy. And he's with us right now. Nice to have you with us today, Gary. Do we have Gary there?
Yeah. Hey, Gary. Thanks for having me on the show.
Nice to have you with us. Gary, recently I had Janine Wedel, a professor of public policy at George Mason University, who is focused on shadow lobbying and dark public relations by top elite power brokers and corporations and organizers and PR groups and the media to capture the basic building blocks to sway legislative policies and influence public perceptions. Well, today, because of the regulations and oversight of traditional lobbying, the individuals and groups have found loopholes and other means to promote their agendas that are far less transparent and less accountable. And consequently, traditional lobbying is waning, and there's an increase in more shadow operations to exert power and manipulate public discourse. And based upon your organization's recent report, it would seem that Monsanto and DuPont and other food industry companies are putting their money and efforts into playing this shadow game. And the public relations and media venue is the one we know best regarding Monsanto and his allies from the defeat of GMO labeling bills in California, Colorado, and Oregon. So please begin with outlining how it was that Big Food and Big Agra defeated these bills when polls showed that the public overwhelmingly supported GMO labeling, and then speak on the nature of the attacks Big Ag is making on scientists and journalists and contributors to the fighting for proper labeling and how they're impacting the country.
Well, Gary, I think you just explained that very nicely in a short space. So I was campaign manager of Prop 37 for labeling and genetically engineered food in the state of California. And so I saw firsthand at an hour-to-hour basis how the large agrochemical and food companies were able to defeat such a tremendously popular initiative. You know, last year the New York Times did a poll and showed that 93% of Americans support the labeling of genetically engineered food. But the way that the opposition, the big food and agrochemical companies did it was they spent tremendous amount of money In our case, it was $46 million against our $8 million that we had in our campaign. And they used the best ballot measure firms in the country to run very formulaic campaigns, which don't talk about genetic engineering at all. They just try to poke little picking holes that are almost irrelevant. And they use tremendous television advertising firepower, mostly to pick off to win support, mostly of older folks and more Republicans than Democrats. And that's how they have won in all four states that there have been these ballot initiatives in California, Washington, Oregon, and Colorado. But another part of what's really happening here is that since 2012, the agrochemical and food industries have been increasingly worried about the depth of public concern about GMOs. And so they have mounted this very complicated, multifaceted public relations, advertising, lobbying, political campaign in the United States. We know that it costs more than $100 million since 2012, probably a fair amount more than that, but the rest of that money we can't document. It's not public. The purpose of that campaign is to deceive the public, to deflect efforts to win the right to know what's in our food, and to extend the profit stream of the GMO-producing companies and big food for as long as they can keep it going. And this campaign has been very successful. The company that the PR company that is most important in running it, a company called Ketchum, boasts about how successful they've been. They boast of, how positive media coverage has doubled. That's a quote on GMOs, and how when they do a lot of work on social media, which they're very attentive to, how successful they are at counteracting all of the arguments that the nonprofit groups like us make that raise questions about the environmental and health effects of genetically engineered food. So that's what our report is about. We just put out on Tuesday a report called Seed Business, What Big Food is Hiding with its Slick PR Campaign on GMOs. And we talk about 15 different things in the report that the big agrochemical companies are hiding.
Okay, Gary. I'd like for you to go through each one of those and give us just the overview of each one. But before you do that, one of the key items for determining the trustworthiness of any corporation is asking a question. Have they committed past crimes that set precedent to determine their ethical position? All the major agricultural companies, such as Monsanto, DuPont, Syngenta, BASF, and Dow, have long histories of wrongdoing. They have class action suits and have paid out enormous sums of money from fines and penalties. So just give a summary overview of some of the more reprehensible and criminal exploits and activities they have been involved with, and then ask this. If the President of the United States and all members or most of the members of Congress and all the media are willing to trust them constantly with what they say, as if whatever they say is the official truth, and everyone else, yourself, myself, and everyone else that questions or challenges that, are never given the same credibility, yet we have never lied or deceived or hurt people. We have been on the side of truth and right constantly, the whole movement has, and yet we are never given the respect that these criminals have been given. So where in the world do people who pay out these fines, are found to have committed crimes against people, have acknowledged this, and yet every single day of the week, if you were to have any media, the New York Times and NBC or whoever it is, contact them, they're contacting them as if they have a clean slate. They have nothing in their background that would preposition them for bias or unfairness or unethical behavior. And yet, that is how this strange and bizarre Kafka-like charade continues. The people who do the worst against humanity, Wall Street, pharmaceutical companies, and Big Agra, are always the one who are considered exemplary and put at the front of the class without looking at the sordid, rotten, corrupt background they have. Your thoughts, please.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. Running through the list of crimes and wrongdoing by the big six agrochemical firm in and of itself would take us several programs. I mean, there are entire books written, you know, there's an entire book written about Dow, an entire book written about Monsanto. But I think there's an even stronger point, which is that the agrochemical companies have a history of concealing health risks from the public. And that, I think, is even more on point here. So let me just try to do that in just a very short time. So on PCBs, Monsanto was the principal manufacturer of PCBs. You know, and there is extensive documentary evidence about how they tried to hide information about PCBs. I'll just give one quick example of that. In 1998, according to the Washington Post, former plant manager of the Monsanto plant in Anniston, Alabama, was asked in a deposition whether Monsanto officials ever shared their data about PCB hazards with the community. His response, quote, "Why would they?" And, you know, that's the point. Indeed, why would they? You know, it's a great question that applies not only to PCBs, but to genetically engineered food as well. Bacall is another amazing story. Bayer, is the corporate parent of Bayer Crop Science AG, a major agrochemical firm. Bayer hid from the public the effects of the drug that led to 100 deaths and 1,600 injuries due to a muscle wasting disease called rhabdomyolysis. Silicon breast implants is a famous story. Dow Chemical is, you know, the world's second largest chemical company. It's the corporate parent of Dow AgroSciences, a giant, GMO producing company. They're famous for producing these silicon breast implants that and saying that they were safe, they're safe, they're safe, and it turned out that it wasn't true. Lots of other examples I could do too. A famous Bayer plant explosion in Institute, West Virginia, that Bayer tried to paper over, or DuPont and its efforts to hide the health effects of something called PFOA, which is perfluorooctanoic acid. It's a compound used to make nonstick coatings that they failed to report the health effects of. So I could go on and on about this. And so the reason why it's so important to know that the agrochemical companies have a history of concealing health risks from the public is that our entire regulatory structure depends on, believe it or not, depends on trusting these companies and the way that they report whether or not their products are safe. Because the FDA doesn't test whether GMOs are safe. What they do is they accept data from the agrochemical companies and they review it, but they don't actually do their own independent studies. And so, in effect, it's just they trust what these companies give. And we know time and time again that they have hidden health risks from the public.
Gary, while researching the boom of genetic engineering during the Clinton administration, a large public relations firm called Burson Marsteller, where Hillary Clinton was connected from the Rose Law Firm down in Arkansas, Little Rock. She was a partner in the Rose Law Firm. She handled Monsanto's PR, or legally, and many executives from the Rose Law Firm took prominent positions in the Clinton administration, including Webster Hubbell, but also from Monsanto. Monsanto had executives that went into the Clinton administration and were campaigning advisors for Hillary's run for the Senate and for president. Now, this is a company with more sins behind it that can be listed, as you just mentioned. You could spend an hour or a day on this. It was the PR firm for Union Carbide during the Bhopal disaster. It counseled the Stalinist regime of the Romanian president, dictator, and the Indonesian government to bolster its human rights record following the East Timor massacre, and the Nigerian government to discredit the Biafra genocide. And it was the PR firm for Argentina dictator General Videla. Its clients included Blackwater, the Saudi royal family, Exxon, following the Valdez oil catastrophe, Pete Peterson's AstroTurf initiatives, Eli Lilly and Monsanto to promote bovine growth hormone. The New York Times in 1999 reported that the firm hired fake PR, pro-GMO demonstrators as agent provocateurs outside an FDA meeting. However, today there's another PR firm equally capable of supporting Monsanto. It's called Ketchum. So share more about this company, their past, and what they are doing on behalf of Big Ag today.
Okay, so Ketchum is in a lot of ways become the center or a center, perhaps the center of the anti-food movement, anti-good food movement. They have a very long history. They worked for the tobacco industry. Their kind of predecessor, Ketchum McLeod Grove, wrote ad copy for Brown & Williamson cigarette advertising. These days, they are best known, perhaps, for being Rush's PR firm. So while they are the front for the thing called GMO Answers, which is the agrochemical industry's lead public relations effort, they also handle PR for Russia and for Russian President Vladimir Putin here in the United States. They do, for example, when Putin had to place a magnificently deceptive op-ed in the New York Times about Syria, it had Ketchum place it. And so that's what Ketchum does. In addition, another really interesting thing about Ketchum is that it hired the investigative firm Beckett Brown International to conduct a massive espionage effort against Greenpeace, including things like hiring police to gain access to Greenpeace's trash, hiring a firm staffed by former National Security Agency employees to conduct computer intrusion and electronic surveillance, obtaining phone records of Greenpeace staff and contractors. And Ketchum also appears to have targeted consumer and food safety and environmental groups with espionage over issues related to genetically engineered food. And all this was written about in an awesome story by Jim Ridgway in Mother Jones magazine, say about 5 years ago or so. And so it's so fascinating that here in the United States, for ample reason, we are disinclined to trust Ketchum when it speaks for Russia and its president. Why should we trust Ketchum when it speaks for GMOs any more than we trust it when it speaks for Russia?
Well, the trouble is, Gary, I don't believe we should trust anyone in authority today in the government. Our government lies as a matter of course. We have a fascistic government. Fascism is the commingling of outside of government industrial or corporate elites with those at policymaking levels within government to serve the needs of the corporate interest. That's fascism, and that's what we have. And we are foolish if we decide to look at it any other way. So I don't believe anything anyone in government tells me about anything, because they are so consistent in their capacity to give half-truths or full information, misinformation. We're out of time, Gary. Thank you very much for all the good work you're doing out there and keeping people informed.
Thanks for having me on the show.
And give your website again, Gary.
www.usrtk.org.
Okay. We look forward to another conversation. Gary Rushkin, R-U-S-K-I-N, from the San Francisco Bay Area, with U.S. Right to Know. Now let's move right over to our next newsmaker today, and that's Allison Murphy in Washington, D.C. Allison is an attorney and the legislative director for the Alliance for Natural Health USA, which is a nonprofit with over 400,000 members, and it's dedicated to promoting sustainable health and health freedom choice and protecting the natural health care practitioners through good science and law. And prior to joining the Alliance, she worked in government relations in Washington and the U.S. Senate. Her website is anh-us.org. Nice to have you with us today, Allison.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on. It's great to be talking to you.
Allison, as this is a newsmaker, I'm going to let you do the talking, but it looks like we're going to have some effort at legislation in New York State to interfere with people's right to have supplements. That's where I think this is going. They've done this many times in the past. What's the real purpose of this bill, and how can listeners express their opposition to it? So explain what the issue is, please.
Yes, that's exactly right. Basically, New York State Senator Kenneth LaValle has once again introduced legislation that would require dietary supplements and nutritional supplement products sold in the state to carry a label stating whether or not the product has been tested by the FDA. Now, we have a lot of problems with this type of legislation, but first and foremost, it's misleading to consumers. The biggest problem with requiring a label stating whether or not a product has been tested by the FDA is the FDA does not test products. That is not in the capacity of the FDA. Products are tested on their own and results are shared with the FDA for approval, but the FDA doesn't test products. So this type of label, it just doesn't make sense, and it would be extremely misleading to consumers. Our second big problem with it is this type of state law conflicts with federal law. There's already a huge body of federal law passed in 1994, the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, which outlined the entire regulatory structure for dietary supplements. I mean, they are fully regulated already by the FDA and FTC. There is just no room for states to act in this way. Supplements are regulated as food. They're not regulated like traditional drugs and pharmaceuticals because they're food-based, and so they're not subject to the same pre-approval and pre-testing requirements before entering the market like drugs and pharmaceuticals are. So again, requiring this type of label will just mislead consumers about the regulatory requirements surrounding supplements, and I think it will confuse consumers about the safety of their supplements. Also, with the federal law existing out there, a singular state putting on this type of requirement would severely disadvantage supplements that are sold in New York State. I mean, the added cost of putting on New York State labels, it would eliminate supplements from the market in New York. I mean, the smaller supplements of high efficacy, high value to the market just would no longer be able to sell in New York. So I think it would be highly detrimental to consumers, and we have come out opposing the bill. And as you stated, our website is anh-usa.org. And just last night, we put out an action alert calling our members, and especially our members in New York State, to take action and ask LaValle to withdraw this bill and stop introducing it. And so if anyone wants to access that alert and share their thoughts with Senator LaValle, that can be found at www.anh-usa.org/alertny.
Well, Give us an insight of how best to approach the legislator and other members of the legislature.
Well, there's a lot of great ways to approach the legislature on the state level. Mostly, you'll approach state legislators based on your exact location. And so the great thing with our website is sometimes our alerts will be targeted to a specific member, such as LaValle, who has introduced legislation that I think everyone in the state should oppose. But you can also let your legislator know how you feel just based on your zip code to find out who your representatives are in the state legislature and either call or send them a letter or send their staffers an email. It's so easy to contact your legislatures, and they're very receptive to their constituents. I mean, they want to know what people are thinking out there, and that's why it's so important to have grassroots organizations like ours that can get large groups together to get the word out and really effectuate change. I mean, there's no better way than just picking up the phone or finding out exactly who your representatives are and sending them an email or a letter or a phone call.
Great. Well, we're going to recommend that. And again, people can reach out to the Alliance for Natural Health website, which is anh-us.org. anh-us.org. Thank you very much, Allison Murphy, for being down in Washington and helping protect the American consumer and their right to choose.
Thank you. It was great to talk to you.
We're out of time, everyone. Look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day. Now let's say hello to, we have Luann Panessi on the line. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. You know, we just finishing up a two-week retreat in just the most beautiful setting. And the feedback from people has been just overwhelmingly positive. And I just wanted to take a moment to thank you on behalf of all the people that are calling me and sending me emails. Still, the people from the first week are still just so appreciative of the time that they got to spend. And they feel they have like a whole new lease on life, a whole new focus. And they feel like they have a deeper understanding of themselves, their behavior, and how they can better interact with the world. I didn't know if you wanted to make a comment from your observations of the group.
I just thought it was one of the best outcomes I've ever seen for a group. I've seen people simply state, and we'll have some of these people giving their own personal input next week, but it's changed their life. I mean, people can go away for a retreat, they can relax, they can de-stress, but it's something else when you elevate the outcome to where you have a whole new insight, a new positive dynamic of living, and that's what we have. And so it was all meant to help WBAI, which is in severe financial crisis, and the likelihood is won't survive the year in its current incarnation. There's a movement right now to take BAI, either to sell it and then keep that money for the other Pacifica stations, or to lease it, in which case they would have their insider friends in that deal. But I would not want nothing more to do with any of that at that point, and I would just withdraw my energy. But I've been there 38 years, and March will be 39 years, And it's unfortunate that it's gotten to this point, but it has. And so when we can do a health retreat to help it, we will do it. But I don't think it's going to last a whole lot longer the way that the audience has shrunk at the station. On the other hand, if they saw the numbers that we're pulling in each day, maybe they might think about different programming and different ways of managing and different ways of reaching the public to give themselves another chance. My hope is that happens, but I doubt it. So,
interesting.
So Luann, thank you. And all the people came in from Claire Adams, from Michigan, and Cindy, and people came from around the country to help, and about 20 people. So it was much appreciated. So back now to hard-hitting investigative reporting, some interesting shows coming up. We've got really a phenomenal lineup of programming for next week. So we look forward to everyone getting back into the city and a whole new life ahead of them. Now let's say hello to Utrece Lead. Hi, Utrece.
Hello, Gary. It is Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories, and it's all about what listeners have to say.
Good. Utrece Lead right now.